great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, starting the show today by talking with you about new ways to cook wild game. And back with us, Chef Joel Olson. He's a nationally recognized culinary instructor for children, youth, and adults, and has 20 years of teaching experience. We're going to talk with him about how to use the game and fish in your menus. And we want to hear from you. What would you like to know about cooking with wild game or fish? What's your favorite way to prepare game? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Chef Joel Olson, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much.
Tell you what, it's always more fun when you were able to meet in person rather than over
right.
The phone.
And bring some tasty treats for you to try as well, helped, didn't it?
Yeah, that's always a treat. And speaking of treats, you had to cancel last year's game feed. Were you able to do it this year?
Last year I did with four good friends, and we socially distanced out in the backyard, and it was probably about 25 degrees. We toughed it out last year, and this year we upped it to about 21 people, and it worked out okay. But normally it's about 75 or 80, so we were able to have it, but at a really limited and spread out capacity. But yeah. Yeah, so I was able to at least stretch my wings a little bit and try some new stuff, which is always fun for me.
Yeah. What's the history? This goes back quite a ways, these game feeds.
When I first went to culinary school and then came back to, I was living in Viroqua at the time, and I started celebrating the end of my summer because I teach a lot of kids cooking camps, and I still do teach a lot of kids camps in the summer. And so it's like the end of my summer is the beginning, or the end of the summer is actually the beginning of my vacation time or my off time for September. So I started celebrating by doing a wild game feed. And it's just continued ever since.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So what influenced this year's menu?
Well, I'm always looking for different things to try with my classes for kids and also adults. I'm doing a lot of international food, and international street food has been something I've been delving into and checking out. So just seeing different recipes for beef and different, you know, basically that I could translate into different wild game, venison and elk and that type of recipes, and just trying different flavors. International flavors are just really kind of prone to, because there are a lot of strong flavors in some of the food, and kind of goes well with the game. Game can hold its own with some of these ingredients. So I've been kind of inspired by that.
And you have some recipes. Well, maybe first, I know you're providing some recipes, a couple of recipes for our listeners. But what were some of the recipes you prepared?
Oh, geez, Louise, we did, I'm always a favorite this year instead of doing, because it was a smaller number of folks, I was able to do a little bit more, instead of big food, I call it, where you're just scooping and putting it on your plate and trying it, I did some soufflés, I did a northern pike soufflé, and it's called a twice cooked soufflé, because you actually let it rise like it should rise, and it's all exciting, and then you let it drop, and then you fry it, and it's just divine. I did that with northern pike that I went through like three or four times, making sure there weren't any Y bones in it, but that was incredibly fun. And just the dips and spreads. Instead of doing squirrel pizza this year, we did squirrel calzones, individual squirrel calzones. I was able to just kind of adapt, you know, similar, same ingredients, but just presented in a different way. Instead of doing the Thai green curry with the snapping turtle, did a snapping turtle Newberg, which is a sherry cream sauce, which was a real hit. So it's fun.
And you have a couple of recipes for us. One, a grilled marinated venison heart, I guess you could call it.
Yep. Yeah, and tichucos. Yeah, they're wonderful. And it is actually a Peruvian recipe that they actually do heart on a stick, but it's beef heart that they used on there. So it's marinated in tons of garlic and some vinegar and some like a mild chili paste, and then grilled. And it's just succulent. It was just one of the hits this last fall. Surprisingly so, because people, heart is one thing. First of all, wild game is one thing, and then you get into the different organs, and people are like, oh, I don't know if I want to try that, but it was really good. It tasted just like really good beef, or really good meat, so it was delicious.
And the other one that you have for us that we'll have up on our today's notes on our show is venison tonnado. I looked at the recipe for that, and I thought, well, this is different.
Right. It goes, veal tonnado is the classic Italian preparation. It's a tuna sauce for veal, and I thought, well, how perfect would that be for a nice venison tenderloin? So pan-seared a tenderloin, pan-seared a tenderloin, sliced it really thin, and then had this. It's basically like a really, it's like tuna mayonnaise is a great way to describe it. It might sound gross, but it has capers in it, and it's just really, really piquant. It's wonderful. Nice flavor.
And if you can go to the Larry Mueller Show today to our program notes, today's date, and we have those two recipes up for you from Chef Joel. So please take a look at it. They really sound very, very good to me. Now, you know, when I've done wild game dinners, and I haven't done them for a while, but I would have to scrounge around and whatever I got, and then I had some friends who were also hunters, and they'd provide some things. How do you do it? And have you had problems finding venison, for example?
No, I haven't. I've been lucky. My daughter and I have gone hunting the last couple of years, and we haven't actually gotten anything, but what a wonderful experience just to be in the woods with her and spending the whole day on opening day with her. But I have friends that are always like, we have some sausage, or have some, well, sometimes it's sausage or sometimes ground meat or whatever. There's always, people are always willing to donate, or they know somebody that has some and they get it for me. And I've got a really good friend in Sun Prairie, Steve Owen, who's been wonderful with the snapping turtle and frog legs he brought in this year, and panfish perfectly, and his daughter Rosa, just wonderful. They provide a lot of that kind of stuff. And then a friend down in Evansville, who Ed Newman, who had got the heart, quite a few hearts from him. So it's donated pretty much, and people are, and sometimes that's the ticket to get invited, is, hey, people call me up or email me and say, hey, chef, are you if I have this, can I come to your party? And I'm like, it's usually yes.
Chef Joel Olson, our guest, talking about cooking wild game and fish with him. Questions or comments, or maybe a favorite experience of your own to share a recipe, I'd hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Or you can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Let's talk about maybe some of the mistakes that folks make when preparing game.
Sure. Usually the number one mistake I think people would make would be to overcook.
Yeah.
Just cook it to death, basically. And that's when that's when people say, well, I don't like game. That's when they've had it. It's when it's been overcooked. And I'm not a huge fan. I know a lot of people like the red wine marinade for venison, but I don't like that at all. I never have, even before I went to culinary school. I didn't care. That's how I used to do my venison, but I just don't care for that. Letting the venison sit in red wine for a couple of days or a long period of time, I don't think it does anything except make a little sour crust on the outside of the venison. But I think we've talked in years past, too. I am into brining, where using sugar and salt and liquid to try to permeates the meat and flavors it and sweetens and moistens it as well. So brining is different, but that's usually the mistake, is overcooking. And then also, I think if things are cut in smaller pieces and like going with, instead of big chunks, because it is a dry meat, I mean, a very lean meat, let me put it that way. So I tend to cut things really small, so you don't end up with a big chunk of, somewhat dry meat in your mouth and you're eating a stew. I tend to do more knife skills on my, and make sure I take off all the fat, all the sinew.
Yeah.
A lot of work to get rid of all the, especially thinking venison particularly. But I think, and also just be willing to try, exchange it with one of your other recipes. If you want to try stuff, just if you have a good beef recipe, we'll try it with venison. And you might be like, wow, this is good.
Well, yeah, and you were talking about small pieces. I was thinking about, I tried of fondue with some people over for venison, and it was a big hit.
Oh, my gosh, yes, that's a great idea. And that's all about the sauces that you serve with it, too.
Yeah.
That's what's so much fun about venison. And it's such a, I remember the fondues, sitting around the fondue pot with just beef with my family, and some fond memories of my childhood with my mom and dad and sister. And, yeah, it's a really communal, I love fondue. It's a great idea, Larry.
Let's take some calls. Teddy in Barnes, Wisconsin. Hi, Ted.
Hey, Larry, how you doing? We slaughtered them this year, so we got a lot of venison to make fancy.
Good.
So I'm plowing snow up in barns, too, so that's fun. Say, when I was growing up, we were dirt poor, lived on venison, blah, blah, blah. We always had shoulder roasts and neck roasts. When I said I was 18, I was never going to eat those roasts again. I take the neck, fillet it out, Italian seasoning, marinate, put it on a grill. It is mind-boggling how good it is. And then we make Philly steak sandwiches and French dip. You know, we cut the veni really thin. So that's awesome. And then frog legs you mentioned. When we were kids, we had a lot of frog legs living in Rhinelander. They're big bullfrogs. To the point where we went out once, and that was a treat of a lifetime. We actually took all seven kids and went to a restaurant, and my brother ordered chicken, and he was eating a drumstick. And he looked up to Ma, and he said, "Ma, this is the best frog leg I've ever had in my life."
Well, Teddy, those are good stories. And when you mentioned neck roast, you know, that was one of my dad's favorites.
It's got such great flavor. It's one of my favorite, you know, parts of the venison. The neck is it's used, and the more muscle is used, the more flavor it's going to have.
Yeah.
Which is why the white meat is on chicken is white. It doesn't, because they don't fly and they walk, and so the legs are dark. So the neck and the deer is constantly, you know, lifting its head and moving its neck and, you know, looking for danger and stuff. So it's definitely a well used muscle, and oh gosh, it's so much flavor. That's a great idea. I love the stories, though. That was wonderful.
How do you do frog legs?
I did. I always have to play with food for the game feed. What I did was Hop and John, or Hop, so, which is black eyed peas with, and I braised the frog legs and then took them off, or just, you know, simmered them and then took the meat off the bone and added to some black eyed peas. So.
Oh man, that sounds good, Teddy. Thanks again. Appreciate the call, Aaron in Peshtigo. We'll go to you now. Hi, Aaron.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Cooking wild game is one of my favorite things, and so I got to select just my two things I want to share instead of telling you all the stories I want to tell you. But I just made some deer tongues on Saturday night. Something we started doing a few years ago was cutting the tongues out. And, you know, you're talking about heart. Heart's one of my favorites, but tongue is really even more adventuresome for most people. But you parboil them in a seasoned broth for a couple of hours, get some real tender, and you can peel the skin off of it and then slice it maybe 3/8 of an inch thick, and then just quick pan fry those slices to get a little brown on them. Meanwhile, you use some of that broth to make a horseradish cream sauce to serve it with, and it is just absolutely phenomenal. And I'm just coming to realize the last couple of years how fun it is to have different sauces to complement your meat. You don't always have to make an elaborate meat presentation, but you can pair it with a cool sauce, like Tremula is one I'm real hot on right now, which is made out of cilantro and parsley and garlic. You know, I'll run that through the food processor, and similar things like that just really adds a lot of flavor to a relatively simple presentation. So
that is very cool. Thanks so much, Aaron, for calling. Well, what do you think about deer tongue, Chef Joe?
Oh, wonderful. Again, another muscle that's used a lot. And I have not had deer tongue, but I love beef tongue because it's one of the most beef-flavored things. And so deer tongue, that's a wonderful thing to do. I guess if you didn't have a bunch of them, it may be hard to do one of them because they're not that big. But, yeah, that sounds awesome. And I love the sauce idea. That is totally exactly how I approach things as well. And that's part of my French training. Is that sauces do two things in French cuisine, is they moisten and they flavor, and that's what you're in. Just something to, you can make a simple preparation of pan-seared or grilled meat, slice it, and have a sauce that you can change it. You know, every meal would be different almost, even though you're eating the same kind of meat because you have a different sauce for it. So that's a great point.
Aaron, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Do you have a question or comment or maybe a favorite way of preparing wild game? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Tyler Ditter's our engineer today. Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network, taking a look at ways to cook wild game and fish with our guest chef, Joel Olson, nationally recognized culinary instructor. 20 years of teaching experience. Always great to have him come by. And you can join in with your own thoughts. Give a call at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Let's go to Angela in Baraboo next. Angela, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. It's just a comment. I have had really good luck, especially we lived in Louisiana and we had friends that shot wild pig. And brining it in coconut milk with some lime tree leaves and ginger made it great. It was awesome.
Oh, what do you think, Joel?
That sounds great. Definitely coconut. And that, again, those are some really strong flavors that definitely hold up to wild game. And I would love, I wish we had, I have yet to go boar hunting. I would love to have that chance and just be awesome. But yeah, that's a great idea. I love the, definitely love the coconut and lime and cilantro and lemongrass and all that stuff.
Oh, it sounds great. Thanks, Angela. Appreciate it. When you're brining, Joel, what typically what are you using as a brine?
I use 1/3 cup table salt, 1/3 cup granulated sugar, and 2 quarts of water. And that's my start brine. And then you can go different directions from that. So it's 1/3 cup salt, 1/3 cup sugar, and 2 quarts of water. You can add flavorings, aromatics to it, you know, bay leaves, thyme, and herbs, things like that. You can swap out some of the water with apple juice or apple cider. You can use beer for part of it or wine for part of it. But it's always the 1/3, 1/3, and 2 quarts of liquid.
So the coconut milk would fit in there.
It would, but I would only do like maybe do a can of coconut milk as part of like a 15-ounce can of coconut milk as part of the 2 quarts.
Okay. Angela, thanks again. Appreciate it. Let's go to Brenda in Janesville. Hi, Brenda.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
I would love to share a really wonderful recipe. It originally was given to me, and I made it. I was living in Colorado.
Yeah.
But it was sweet and sour elk. I since have moved here to Janesville, Wisconsin, and I make it with venison, and it's equally as good. It doesn't, depending on where the venison has been shot, location mm-hmm. for what they eat, it changes naturally the texture of the venison. But you can just slowly cook it in a fry pan, skillet, mm-hmm. and put some chunks of onion in there and brown those together, and then start adding chunks of green pepper, chunks of cut carrots, and cook that down, and it makes its own juices. And then you ultimately put a jar of peach preserves and a jar of Russian dressing in there, and then start simmering it, and then you serve it over hot rice, and it is wonderful.
Sounds good. What do you think, Chef Joel?
I love a jar of this and a bottle. I love using it, but to me, it's almost like not cooking when I do something like that. It sounds delicious. It really does. I'm going to try something like that. But yeah, just being opened up a jar of a really good preserve, and then I mean, I love Russian dressing. I always think of iceberg lettuce though when I think of Russian dressing. But yeah, it's and you're adding a lot of sugar. There's just obviously there's a ton of sugar, but it's wonderful. It sounds good.
Sounds good. Thank you. Appreciate it very much, Brenda. There's a recipe that I have for luau venison, which is kind of similar to that. And I know from experience that people like it a lot. So
sure. There
you go. Brenda, thanks. Len, let's go to Russ in Belleville. Hi, Russ.
Hey, Larry. I just wondered if your guest had ever heard of Pennsylvania scrapple.
You betcha.
Ah.
Yeah, where did you hear about it?
I know Scrapple from driving by a Scrapple factory in Delaware on my way to the beach, on the way to the ocean. And it has an incredible, it reminds me of the rendering planet. It used to be at Oscar Mayer here in Madison. It doesn't have an aroma, it kind of has a smell. But it's delicious. I love Scrapple. And it's kind of like the cornmeal version of Spam, is kind of I equate it with. Is that how you think of it as well? Or
what do you think, Russ?
Years ago, I saw a magazine in the old DNR conservation bulletin for Pennsylvania Scrapple, so we figured we'd try it, and we cut up all the bones into small enough pieces, you know, after you get most of the trimmings off, put them in a pressure cooker, and the meat falls off, you pick off the bones, and you've got that gel that comes from the marrow, and then you add some cornmeal and some onions and some bacon and, you know, cook it again, and then put it in some, like, meatloaf pans, and we used to fight over it as kids. You know, you could either have it as cold luncheon meat, or it was great to brown in a pan. It was just, we just treasured it.
It's good stuff. You know, anytime you had bacon, too. And also, it was a way of using every single piece of meat that was on the animal. So it's such a great recipe. And you don't have, you can cut the fat on some of it as well, so it doesn't have to sound as, you know, if you're using the good parts of the meat too, it's much better than just using the bad parts. So it's a wonderful recipe. Yeah, it sounds like a good memory.
Yeah, Russ, thank you so much. That's a great, great memory. Well, Ben in Green Bay, what's on your mind?
Hi, I just had a real quick comment. My favorite venison recipe is just use a meat grinder and make like Swedish meatballs. And you just add, you know, a little bit of, if you can find beef tallow or lard or any kind of fat that's, you know, solid at room temp, anything you can do with the recipe, you can add whatever you want. Very quick and easy. Makes it taste great.
Yeah.
I end up adding ground pork or pork fat is my preferred way to moisten the venison. And Swedish meatballs, that was one of the things I made for game feed this year. One of the normal, I did some Italian meatballs and some Swedish meatballs, just for the heck of it, just for the comfort food aspect of wild game. I love it. It's a great idea.
Yeah, that's great. I was thinking about a recipe I do. They're a cocktail venison meatballs, a sort of an Oriental style with. And I use pork sausage along with the venison, but you know, then there's rolled oats and there's some, I don't remember now, water chestnuts and chopped up, and of course an egg involved, some soy sauce, some garlic salt, onion salt.
There you go.
A dash of Tabasco. It's and then of course the sauce for it is really great. So. Thank you, Ben. Swedish meatballs. I love them anyway. So
that's, it's that time of year, too.
Yeah, it is. Judy in Mount Horeb. Hi.
Hi. Hi.
What have you got for us today?
I wanted to make a venison roast, and my dad, and he hated venison roast, so I decided to try to mask it, so I made it with a pork roast. And he didn't know the difference. And I said, well, how did you like the venison? He goes, what? That wasn't venison. And because the flavors melded and it added some, you know, oil to the venison. Of course, I salt and peppered it. I browned it a little bit, all of them, and added some onion, of course, and roasted it. And it was delicious.
And so you did a venison roast and a pork roast together.
Together.
Yeah. Joel, what do you think?
That's great, especially the comment like, oh, I really love that roast, and then find out what it is, you know. So it's and the thing is that the pork fat is just it's such a wonderful product. Pork fat is it's almost like its own food group, but that's really cool. And to do them together, you're getting the, because fat carries flavor, and it would make the venison just even taste that much better. And that's a great idea to do the two together.
Yeah, Judy, thank you so much. I like that idea a lot, too. Well, you can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Give a call or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Let's turn to Tom in Washburn County. Hi, Tom.
Hey. How you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling. What have you got for us today?
Well, it took me a while to figure this out, but I've got gluten-free family members, and we love to have fish, but, you know, it's kind of hard for them. So what I finally came up with, and crappies are actually, they're my favorite, and pretty much everybody likes them. You can do this with any fish, though. When you're going to put the flour part in there, I've come up with, like, half almond flour and half millet flour. That seems to really work pretty well with this. And then, you know, like, a lot of people will put beer in it, or you can, like, put a gluten-free beer in there. But I don't know, sometimes those aren't so great because they're sorghum-based or whatever. But club soda seems to work pretty well. And then when I do pan fry them, I use avocado oil. It seems to take the heat really well, plus it's very neutral. But my wife is one of them that can't have the gluten, and now that I do this, this is like bluegills and crappies are particularly a favorite. But anyway, I just thought I'd share that.
See what you and Joel thought about that. And it's almond, half almond flour, and half millet flour.
Right.
Okay.
And then whatever else, you know, you mix it up with to make your batter, like, you know, cornstarch and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But anyway, I'll listen off the air, but I just thought I'd share that.
That's great.
Absolutely. That's really good. And what's nice about the almond flour, too, is there's a lot of oil in the almond flour because it's basically just ground up almonds. And so, and you've got the nice fat or the oil from the almonds that's going to help moisten the fish and brown it nicely as well. So, and club soda, that's usually what I go to when I'm making onion rings and stuff like that. I do like beer batter, but club soda, and it's also used in like tempura and stuff like that. So it's a great idea.
Yeah, and that almond would give it a kind of a nice taste, I would think.
Absolutely. And using up different oils as well. So it's interesting when you have to cook for or find that you need to cook for special diets and stuff, how it's nice to, there's so much more information out there than there was when all this stuff first started becoming noticed, and it makes it not so daunting, you know, to make something that everybody likes instead of having to make separate meals for, you know, the person who has the situation. So that's great.
I loved it. Well, let's take another call. Dan in Wisconsin Dells, your turn. Hi.
Hi there. I love your show, Larry. Every day is the best. Anyway, a friend gave me some canned venison that he canned a couple of years ago. I'm just wondering how long does it last and what would be the best dish to make with it?
Canned venison will last as long. I mean, it could last, not forever, but it lasts a long time, especially if it was canned properly. And you would know, I think, when you opened it, if it wasn't canned properly, it would give off an odor that you would make you not want to cook with it. But it's, you know, canned meat, it's casseroles. Also, like, even with barbecue sauce, just it's ready to eat, basically. So whatever you would do with, like, cooked leftover roast beef or something like that is how I would go with it, even soups. So it's just wonderful. A friend of mine canned a bunch of bear this last year up in Rice Lake. So I may hopefully get a chance to try that. If you're listening, Tom, I'd like to try that. But anyway, so that's a nice gift. I love it when it's a different kind of product, too, which is kind of fun. I like that.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. Grant emailed to say he has mostly eaten black-tailed deer, but soon will be given some white-tailed deer loin steaks. Should he treat the white-tailed deer meat differently? And also, do you have a favorite recipe for using white-tail loin steaks?
I don't think I would treat them too differently, except the woman who called earlier was talking about how the venison tastes different from where it shot or what it ate. You know, basically going into the diet, like venison shot around Marshfield, you know, near the meat is going to have a kind of a marshier taste because it's eating different grasses and things like that. So if it's just a loin, I love just barely cooking it and, you know, searing it and slicing it thinly. I love loin. That's usually the one that people don't give away. So it's always a gift if you do get the loin.
That tends to get eaten right away.
Yeah, exactly. Usually, and oftentimes at deer camp, you know, they cut that out, and that's what they'll eat because it's kind of like the benefit of being at deer camp. So
yeah, absolutely. Sharon in Crivets. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. My husband belongs to a pheasant farm, so we have lots of pheasant in the freezer. And I must admit, it is dry when I cook it, and I really need some recipes for cooking something with it.
I like to braise pheasant in cream. So I would cut it into, you know, not the whole lobe of the breast, but cut it into like bigger steaks, basically steak out the breast, and then simmer it with some leeks or onions and cream, and just let it simmer. And it's just so succulent and dry. I mean, and not dry, it's just really moist. And then you can reduce the cream. It'll render off a little bit of liquid, so it'll get thinner. So if you can just cook the cream down again, you've got a ready-made sauce with some noodles and green vegetable and a salad. You've got a nice winter meal right there.
Yeah, that sounds great. I make a glazed breast of pheasant with where you flatten out the breast, and then you there's a stuffing that I use with just white bread and mushrooms and some scallions, a little butter, and just you know, wrap that breast around the stuffing and bake it up, and then I use a little honey and a honey lemon juice mixture over it. And oh my gosh, it's so good. And the
sounds good.
Stuffing is just great. And you can do a sweet and sour pheasant with.
Yep.
And one of the ones that recipes that I have, I call it pheasant dippers nuggets with some breast meat, a pheasant breast meat. That I love it all. And if you can probably look up a dipper's nugget kind of recipe, and I think I sort of adapted one of those. And I have a sort of a sauce for it that it's another one of those pineapple kinds of sauces that is really good. So there's a lot of ways. Sharon, you might shoot me an email, and I can send you a couple of those recipes too.
And even the pheasant marsala.
Yes,
pound out some pheasant, pound some chunks of pheasant meat, and then dip it in flour, fry it, and do a marsala, mushroom sauce. Just take any veal marsala recipe and adapt it with pheasant. Because I do it with turkey, with wild turkey as well, and turkey marsala. So it's. Yeah, there are a lot of different ways.
Yeah, send me an email with your address, Sharon, and I'll send you back a couple of those recipes. Grant, let's see, we already talked about Grant. Let's see, Larry in Black River Falls emailed. He's interested in recipe ideas for black bear roasts in particular. There's another one where you want to get the fat off.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And that should actually, classically be done in the field, get rid of all that fat and cool that meat down as quickly as possible. Bear has a lot of flavor, that's for sure. I have not had the fortune. I've always gotten small packages of bear. I've never gotten a big roast to play with. So I'll be up front and say I've never cooked a big bear roast. I've gotten ground bear, and I've made bear gaz, which is like a Moroccan sausage out of that. So I would think strong flavors, low heat, long and slow, crock pot or oven, and just, that's best advice I can give for that.
Yeah, it's
and it's awful oily, and I know it's got a lot of fat even in it itself, so it renders quite a bit.
It renders quite a bit, and sometimes you can use. My dad shot a pretty large deer, a bear, 1 year, and I'm not remembering the recipe that my mother used for the roast, but low and slow was definitely, and I think she actually used some other kind of. She might have rolled it in a little bit of pork fat or something.
Sure.
But low and slow for sure. And Jeanette in Lake Nebagamon is new to making sausage. What's the best recipe for venison hot dogs?
The best is to make the number one thing with sausages is make sure you have enough fat with it. You really have to have enough fat because Otherwise, it's like eating a chalk, a stick of chalk, you know, if a sausage doesn't have enough meat in it. So, again, I go with really heavy, high-fatted ground pork, you know. Again, pork's so wonderful. And then the seasonings are up to you. There's so many different kinds of sausages out there. So, but the thing is to make sure there's enough fat.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, Joel, have you been teaching classes?
I have been. As a matter of fact, I've been doing some classes here in Madison at Smokey's Club. We're doing behind the scenes a steakhouse series, and all that stuff's available on our website, hemmachef.com, hemmachef.com, and doing some kids candy classes this weekend, and I'm heading out to the Washington, D.C. area next week for a weekend of classes, and things are picking up a little bit, which is good, and there's still small groups, and we're, you know, just taking things carefully, but it's nice that people are wanting to get out and wanting to explore more of their food and getting back into it again.
Well, Smokey's has always been a great place to go for steak.
It's been fun just to be in the kitchen there. And it's really special, really small classes. So, again, that's I got a Valentine wine dinner. I mean, a whiskey dinner coming up in January and then a Valentine wine dinner coming up. So that's just a wonderful place. And thanks to Tom Schmock for my friend for helping me out and letting me do classes there. We enjoyed doing it.
Yeah. And, again, it's hemmachef.com, H-E-M-M. HemmaChef.com.
Yep.
And HemmaChef, of course, all one word.
Which means home chef in Swedish, because I started by doing in-home and still do in-home cooking parties and private lessons and all sorts of stuff. So and feel free to contact me if anybody would like a lesson or a private party. And I travel all over the state, so I'd be happy to talk with you.
Yeah, it'd be great, and it'd be a lot of fun to cook with you, too.
Thanks. It is fun. Yeah, we should do that, Larry. We should get together and cook. You could teach me something.
Scott Craven's trying to get me on to we used to teach some wild game cooking classes together, and he's trying to get me back into doing that. So we might just be doing that down the road here in the not too distant future.
Great.
Always a pleasure, Joel. Thank you so much. And again, I got to remind you that he left the two recipes he gave us up on our website. So go to today's program, the Larry Mueller Show program. Ideas at WPR.org/Larry. Go to today's date and look under program notes, and you will find those two recipes. Always fun talking with Joel, and we will, I'm no doubt, have him back, and we'll do it all over again. We're going to, you know, we didn't talk a lot about fish, but we did talk a little about preparing fish, but fishing, it's a favorite pastime for a lot of people. And our next guest has written a book that I absolutely loved reading. It's called Return to Familiar Waters, A Fly Fisherman's Journey Back to the Troubled River of His Youth. Scott Seymour coming up next. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.